This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
It's all in the timing.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Mark Austin Thomas. Hewlett-Packard CEO Mark Hurd cashed out a big chunk of his stock options. He did this about a week before the company's big spying scandal story broke. Hurd made about $1.5 million. He wasn't alone. Other HP insiders cashed out as well. The company says the trades were not related to the scandal. Now, this happened during a three-week period at the end of each quarter when executives can sell their shares. Attorneys are suing on behalf of shareholders, and they're considering adding charges of insider trading to the suit. America lost about 8 CEOs a day in September. Yesterday alone, there were 3 high-profile departures. Despite CEOs' big salaries, a new study has some surprising information. It says when it comes to job insecurity, the big dogs suffer just like the rank and file. Here's Marketplace's Steve Tripoli.
Figures for the year so far promise to make 2006 a high mark for executive dumping. John Challenger of the Challenger Gray and Christmas outplacement firm says the once imperial CEO is feeling the heat.
CEOs are under intense pressure from much more activist boards, from shareholders who second-guess their decisions.
Then there are legal woes. A lot of CEOs are losing their jobs to recent scandals about backdating stock options. The revolving door means a new and different crop of candidates. Leslie Gaines-Ross watches executive image making at Weber Shandwick Worldwide.
Hopefully they'll be more seasoned and prepared for the public spotlight.
But John Challenger says incoming execs will need more than polish.
The new CEO really does need to have a spotless record, not only of success, but ethical success.
In the meantime, sudden departures have many boards scrambling. Challenger says the confusion could show in companies' bottom lines. I'm Steve Tripoli for Marketplace.
Yesterday, President Bush asked the UN Security Council to make sure North Korea doesn't sell any nuclear technology. That might not be so easy, Amelia Templeton reports.
Most countries agree with the U.S. that economic sanctions are the best response to North Korea's supposed nuclear test. What's tricky is figuring out how much of a squeeze to put on the North Korean economy. John Wolfstahl is a fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He says squeezing too hard might backfire.
We have to at least ask ourselves the question, if we sanction North Korea so heavily that the leadership feels that they need currency at any cost, would they then sell a nuclear weapon to another country or terrorist group?
The North Koreans have hinted that they might do just that. And Wolfsall says they'd find plenty of willing buyers.
They have sold ballistic missiles in the past to Iran, to Syria, to Pakistan, and to Yemen. The list of potential client states really reads like a bad list of rogue countries.
The threat to sell might be a bluff, but Wolfsall says it puts the UN in a tough spot as it debates acceptable sanctions. I'm Amelia Templeton for Marketplace.
The nation is split over home prices. According to a new Associated Press and AOL poll, 46% of people think their housing market is overpriced. About the same number think prices are going to go up in the next couple of years. Well, the numbers were down for the market at the close yesterday. The Dow fell 15 points to 11,852. The Nasdaq slid 7 points to 2308. And the S&P 500 was down 3 points at 1349. And this is Marketplace. Around the country this morning, a new study says the use of food stamps in Maine jumped by more than 50% from 2002 to 2005. And the Bangor Daily News reports the biggest jumps were in the more affluent coastal counties. The study suggests one factor behind the increase might be a hike in fuel prices. Another could be the switch from paper stamps to debit cards, which might ease the stigma of using food stamps. Here's an alert to residents of 12 East Texas counties. You don't live in the Piney Woods anymore. It's been rebranded as Texas Forest Country. The Houston Chronicle says business and city leaders were concerned the old name sounded too folksy. They're trying to attract retirees to the area. And Miami Beach is cleaning up its act. The city has had problems with trash. Handbills for nightclubs often end up on the ground seconds after pedestrians get them. The Miami Herald says the city has given a preliminary nod to a ban on handing out flyers on the busiest streets. You're listening to American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. By Fellows. Millions of businesses worldwide choose Fellow Shredders for their shredding needs. Fellows, for information protection you can depend on. More at Fellows.com. And by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, committed to providing financial expertise that helps both our members and our communities thrive. Let's thrive. Thrivent.com.
This is Marketplace. I'm Mark Austin Thomas. A congressional committee has sent a letter to the president of the National Collegiate Athletic Association. The letter raises questions about whether the NCAA deserves the education-based tax exemption it currently receives. David Carter is the executive director of the USC Sports Business Institute. I asked him how playing college sports furthers the educational purpose of NCAA member schools.
Well, that's precisely what the Committee on Ways and Means wants to figure out. I think they're wrestling with the issue of, is the NCAA truly in the core business of educating students, or are they pushing a little bit too far, maybe in terms of exploitation? And so I think that's what they're really looking at. But you have to think about the fact there are 1,000 schools that make up the NCAA. Most of them have consistently demonstrated the right balance between academics and athletics. And again, we only hear about the big money conferences, the Michigans, the Tennessees, the USCs, but most of these schools, 90% of them are under the radar doing the right thing. So there certainly is the right place for it.
The letter points out the NCAA has a $6 billion, with a B, dollar TV and marketing contract for college basketball. With that kind of revenue, why does it feel it should receive tax-exempt status?
Well, I don't know if there's any true connection between revenue generation and the need for tax exemption. I don't think those two things go together. I think where you run into trouble is if the revenue that you've generated isn't going to your core mission for which you have been granted that tax-exempt status. If you look at the money coming in from basketball, 85% of the NCAA's budget comes from the basketball tournament, and they use a lot of that money in the end to then redistribute that to member institutions, including a lot of these smaller schools that, again, we don't hear too much about.
Would you say that the chances are slim and none that Congress will actually reverse decades of IRS tax policy here?
Well, they probably are slim and none. You have to understand the high-level connections between university administrations and politicians and just really core relationships that are in place. And I don't think they really want to undertake any wholesale reform. You add to that the fact that corporate sponsors also aren't inclined to want to move forward with a lot of reform. But having said that, the NCAA, college sports in general, really does have to begin to continue, I guess, to look at how it has balanced athletics and academics. And they've got to do it in a way that really helps matriculate students and protect the ongoing issues that are very important, like gender equity. So I think there is some reform coming. Exactly how it's positioned with these core constituencies, though, is going to be tough to balance.
How did college sports arrive at this state of affairs? How do we get here?
Well, I think it's been a steady progression over the last 20 years or so, mostly linked to the advent of big-time college athletics on television. As that has happened, you've seen schools believing that they can leverage that to build student bodies, to generate more revenue from marketing. And corporate sponsors have also wanted to jump on the bandwagon and take advantage of the added megaphone that college athletics gives them from a marketing standpoint. So it's been steady over the last 20 years, and I think that where we find ourselves today is that everybody attached to college sports seems to want to be able to find a way to make money from it.
David Carter is the executive director of the USC Sports Business Institute. And in Los Angeles, I'm Mark Austin Thomas. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
About 46 million Americans.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.